This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.
One thirty in the afternoon, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website for your latest Winnipeg Jets and Evander Kane news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Jeff O'Neill from TSN Radio in Toronto. You see him on the TSN Hockey Panel. You see him on Leafs Lunch, of course. Jeff, appreciate your time and thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Anything going on in Winnipeg, guys?
No, not a lot. You know, it's been pretty quiet, you know, just sort of usual. Jeff, before we get to obviously asking you about the Kane saga, I just want to let our audience know that according to the Jets, Evander Kane did have his shoulder surgery today, so he is officially out now for 4 to 6 months. Jeff obviously brought you on to talk about that from a former player's perspective. You know, we start with the incident on Tuesday in Vancouver. You know, was putting Evander Kane's clothes in the shower, in the cold tub, whatever it ends up being, was that out of bounds for, you know, acceptable locker room behavior?
I've seen guys rip arms off of suits, cut legs off of suits, and I'm not talking about Le Chateau suits either. I mean, it's just, the thing is, I got to tell you guys, if it was a regular practice day and somebody did that to my tracksuit, and I'm pretty sure Evander Kane wears expensive tracksuits, I wouldn't be happy. But the thing is, on the road in the National Hockey League, you're expected to wear a suit to the rink. And I would never put myself in a position, because if you do that on a game day and everyone else wears a suit, it irritates people. It's just like, why are you doing that when the rest of the team? And it's, you know, I used to sit beside Ron Francis on the bus, guys, and he would always talk about the principle of things. You know, I would say, why do you even care about this stuff? It doesn't really matter. And he would be like, it's just the principle. So guys take, you know, they think about the principle for certain things like that. And it's like, why are you wearing that to the rink? And if you're going to do it, this is what we're going to do to you to put you in line. And that's just the way things go in the locker room. It might sound outrageous to people. It might sound goofy to other people. But if you kind of go against the code of behavior, you're going to pay for it. And he did, and he didn't like it. And he should have known better. I mean, you just can't put yourself in that situation. It's ridiculous.
Jeff, we know that, you know, players talk, you know, they grow up, they play in the, you know, you play in the OHL, they play in the CHL, they play in NCAA, and they're always talking to each other and they're on different teams. Is it known around the league through, you know, all the players that Evander Kane has attitude issues?
I've talked to one player that played with him in the World Championships and said it was an act like he's never seen before. That's the only way he described him. Well, so what that means, I'm not sure. But he made a point of sending me a note to give his feedback, to say of all the players, he's never really had any issues, but that's the one guy that it was just, you know, it wasn't good, and it was, nobody liked it, and he stuck out for the wrong reason. So it's just some immaturity and some selfishness and kind of a self-belief in his own body of work, or he just thinks he's better than probably what he is, and he's got an attitude problem. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say further down the road, if he gets surrounded by some quality leadership, or, I mean, I just discussed Ron Francis. I was a bit of a yahoo myself when I was younger, but when you become in contact with a Hall of Famer, the guy that's got the second most assists in the NHL, you kind of wake up. Even guys like Gary Roberts, Brendan Shanahan, Kevin Dineen, you kind of realize if you want the success, if you want what they got, they've done it by conducting them a certain way. I mean, they're not some of the most well-respected people in the business for being an idiot. You know what I mean? They're mm-hmm. not trying to buck the trend of doing their own thing, being on their own program. They're ultimate leaders and guys that set examples for everyone else, not by going off and thinking that they're better than the team. And that's why. You know, I've been fortunate enough to spend time with Steve Yzerman and had numerous dinners with Mary Lemieux. It's just these guys, they don't conduct themselves like that. And that's why I'm always curious. It's like, you know, if Sidney Crosby or Jonathan Toews or Steven Stamkos, if they don't behave like that, why would anyone else think that it would be acceptable or the road to success. I don't understand why, you know, I was always a big believer in the copycat theory, where it's like, if you see a guy that's respected and has success and sets records and has championships and all that stuff, wouldn't you want to kind of emulate that? Because if Steve Yzerman and Mario and Crosby and Taze and these guys don't do it, why would anybody else want to do it? It just doesn't make sense to me.
You know, Jeff, by the way, speaking of dinners, that dinner that we had in Philadelphia after the draft with, with Gary Lawless, I thought was one of the best dinners I've had in a while.
Probably because you didn't pay.
Jeff, you know, back to the incident. How do you think that this wasn't kept in the dressing room and it was kept behind closed doors?
Sorry, can you repeat the question again?
You know, getting back to the Evander Kane, you know, incident that happened here, why wasn't this just kept behind closed doors and out of the media?
My only guess would be that they don't like him and they wanted it to be out, because if it was someone else that was, adored in the locker room, maybe a Bufflin or an Andrew Ladd that maybe kind of slipped up and did something silly, you choose to protect someone you really care about. And in this situation, it seems like maybe they wanted to get it leaked out because they've had enough. And I got to be honest with you, when I got to a stage in my career where I felt like I was a leader and there was ever a player, I mean, people talk. I mean, the general manager talks to players, the coaches talk to players, and sometimes they'll just ask a flat-out question, what the hell is this guy's deal? And if it's something that's painful and you want to remove from the locker room, you tell him, you say, this guy's a problem child, and we don't have the time or patience to deal with it. And we're trying to do something good here, and he doesn't fit in, and everyone's sick of it. So that's the only thing I can think of, is that he's not well-liked or respected in the locker room. Because, like I said, if it was the big buff who's played fantastic for Winnipeg this year, or an Andrew Ladd, I mean, I've seen guys kind of slip up, and they show up late, or they, you know, and you'll do your best to get on the phone, get them at the rink on time, or, you know, where is that guy? We got to help him out. You got to bail him out. But in this certain situation, it didn't seem like anybody wanted to do that.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Jeff O'Neill, discussing the Evander Kane situation. Jeff, you played for Paul Maurice. How do you think he handled the situation?
I thought he handled it like a coach that has a lot of experience. I mean, I had 20 goals for the Toronto Maple Leafs coming down the stretch, and Nick Antropov was coming back from injury. And he called me into his office, and there was only Sundin and Tucker that had more goals than me on the roster. And he said, you know, you might think you're playing good right now, but you're not. And when Antropov comes back in, you along with Chad Kilger and another couple guys, and I'm thinking, is this guy serious? He's putting me in the name with these guys as somebody that might come out for Nick Antropov. And sure as hell, I was the guy that came out, and I went into his office and I said, I got 20 goals, third most in the team, and you're pulling me out. And he's like, you're just not performing to what I expect you to, and that's why you're coming out. And it wasn't a good ending for the season to me, and that's just his belief. And I'll give him credit because he sticks by his guns. And there's not enough accountability in life in general and in professional sports throughout the NHL. You know, you're talking about general managers having press conference saying, you know, the coach needs to make our players feel better. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry. I grew up in an era where or I played in the league in an era where it's like, you either do it or you don't. And if you don't, you're making a lot of money. There's got to be consequences, whether it's ice time or being in the press box. It's like, if you don't have accountability, these players have so much term, so much money on these contracts. If you don't hold them accountable as far as what they're doing on the ice, you're creating monsters. You look at Phil Kessel here in Toronto, he can basically go out and do whatever the hell he wants on the ice. And he knows he's going to go back out there first up on the power play, 15 to 20 minutes of ice time a night. It's like, whatever it is, I'm going to do it. And then whatever the consequences, I don't really have to deal with anything. So I'm going to keep doing what I want to do. And if you don't get that straightened out, and I believe Paul's got that straightened out in Winnipeg, where there's a code of conduct for the players. And if you're not going to do it, you're not going to play. And I have a ton of respect for that, because there's just not enough of it.
Jeff, how many players, I mean, you played in the league for, you know, over 10 years, you went to the final in 02, so you had played long seasons. In the year you went to the final, you played, 98 regular season and playoff games. But even at this point in the season, 50, 55 games in, how many guys could have surgery if they wanted to?
I was put in the exact same position as Evander Kane. I had the same injury, a torn labrum in my shoulder, and I was going to be traded, and I took a face-off against John Madden, or I think that's his name, John Madden from New Jersey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I took the face-off, I blew my shoulder out, and I couldn't move my arm. I couldn't lift it. And I told the doctor, I'm like, I don't know. I can't play, and I can't get traded because I'm not going to pass a physical. And I can remember Peter Laviolette asking me in the training room, he's like, you know, I have a labrum problem too. And I said, yeah, well, that's great. You're a coach. I'm a player. I mean, what do you got to do? Write down notes and then fire some passes in practice? You can tear whatever you want, but I got to go out there and get killed by Scott Stevens, and I can't do it, and I can't pass the physical, so I don't know really what you want me to say. It is kind of odd, the circumstances with him, how he was grinding it out, and then all of a sudden when this adversity came, he decided to kind of to end his season. So I know one thing about the NHL guys, I'll never, you know, a guy's injury, I'll never second-guess their decisions, because I know sometimes people look at you and say, are you really hurt? I know in my heart of hearts I was, but it seems kind of odd how he decided to mail it in for the season after this kind of incident happened. It's almost like saying to his teammates, well, you pissed me off, now I'm out of here, so that's the way it's going to go.
Jeff, with Evander Kane, you have a situation where whether or not he's requested a trade, they've talked about the possibility of a trade. How much blame do you think falls on the shoulders of Kevin Cheveldayoff for not moving Evander Kane already?
Well, I think Kevin was trying to do something special this year, and when you're in a division with a lot of talented players, with St. Louis, Chicago, Dallas, Colorado, I'm sure he wanted Evander Kane to be a part of the solution and not a problem. I mean, the guy's ability speaks for itself. He's got the skill set, the size, the speed, his production hasn't been after the 30 goals, but he probably thought he was part of the solution and a guy that could have helped the team. So when you're trying to, you know, go down the stretch drive, and I'll give him credit for one thing that I have criticized him in the past, you know, he's been extremely patient. And he probably thought Evander Kane's a talent that you don't really come across too often, and he wanted to be part of the mix. Can you bring him back in that locker room after this mess? I'm not sure you can do that. I'm sure the player doesn't want to do it, and I'm sure the rest of the guys in that locker room don't want to do it.
Jeff O'Neill covers the NHL for TSN Radio in Toronto. You see him on Leafs Lunch. You see him on the TSN Hockey Panel. Jeff, we appreciate your time, and next time you're in Winnipeg, lunch dinner's on Ezzy.
The last part was a lie, but I'll call you anyway.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good, like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Jeff O'Neill for joining us to talk about Evander Kane. This segment is brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com. Gentlemen, ultimately, at the end of this all, the Winnipeg Jets are not as good of a team today as they were at the beginning of the week. I think everybody can agree with that. I'm not saying it's going to be a death knell to their playoff chances, because I still think this team probably is a playoff team. But how does the subtraction of Evander Kane from the lineup, with no addition to the lineup as of yet occurring, how does that affect the team's playoff chances going forward?
Well, I think, Richie, we talked about it in the first hour of the show. I think, you know, with Evander Kane being out of the lineup, you have Dustin Byfuglien going to forward, so it affects the line combination, and I think affects the ability for this team to create offense. How does it affect their playoff chances? Well, it certainly doesn't help. And having a guy like Evander Kane, even though, you know, he's not on pace for 30 goals this year, he's still a guy that when you get past, Richie, the top line of Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, and Andrew Ladd, and past Matthew Perreault, you know, he's probably the fifth best scorer on this team. Yeah, and, you know, before the season started, you'd probably even put him above Perreault there, right? And above Ladd, even who's you know, on pace for a nice season, he'll hit 20 goals easily here. He's got 18. So how does it affect their playoff chances, Drew? I still think that this team, despite Evander Kane being out of the lineup, has enough horses in the stable here to get into the playoffs. They got to keep getting points. They can't have any extended losing streaks. I mean, this is the longest losing streak or longest streak without a clean win they've had since they came over here. Six games without a regulation win. They got to end this tomorrow against Colorado. But I agree with you. This isn't something that is going to completely throw their season off. This is still a team, Richie, that was picking up wins without their top four defensemen of the lineup. Mm-hmm. I think not having Jacob Trouba, Mark Stewart, Zach Bogosian, and Tobias Enstrom in the lineup is a lot worse than not having Evander Kane in the lineup.
I agree with that. I think the team's going to, I said last night on the pregame, I think they'll, you know, galvanize the squad a bit. Again, on paper, they're not as good. We know that. But when you move Byfuglien up to forward, I don't know how much of a, like, on the back end, obviously, Byfuglien was playing really well.
I think it creates offense better from defense.
Okay, but fair enough. But he's playing really well on offense, but at the same time, you have these three right-side guys that need to play, right? So, I mean, you're going to play Trouba more, I think, and then Bogosian, you know, depending on his consistency and overall, that might be a little bit of an issue, but still, he's a horse, he needs to play, okay? So Byfuglien goes up to forward, and while, you know, it's a different style than Evander Kane, he can still create offense. It's, again, still leaves. If Byfuglien's a forward and Kane's up front, you still need a top nine guy.
Sure.
And if Kane's not there and Byfuglien's up forward, you still need a top nine guy.
Your
and
defense is a little weakened, though.
Your defense is a little weakened, but how well did they play when they had all those guys there?
Well, they've lost six
it's
games
only
in a row.
Four or five, six games, but they lost them.
Yeah.
And again, you can only have so many, you know, you talk about locker room structure, it's ice time too. You can only have so many top guys playing. And some of them were saying, you know, Zach Bogosian's game was certainly not very strong and he was benched and the whole deal. A guy like Trouba's a horse, you need to play him. And Bogosian still needs to play. And so your bottom guys, who were your top guys when you had those injuries for a month or whatever it is, if they need to play 10, 12 minutes, whatever it was that they played last night, because you look at last night's score sheet, Adam Partey plays 11 minutes, and Ben Sherratt plays 11 minutes, so you deal with it, right? There's bigger problems. So I think it hurts them, don't get me wrong. Obviously, they're a better team on paper if they have them all there. But I don't know if it hurts them as much as everybody thinks. Like, long term, it'll hurt more, but you know, you're talking about what 30 games here, and it's obviously not a small period of time.
Right.
But if they bring in a top nine guy, I think they can be okay. And again, they have a buffer now. Long term, they're going to be able to get pieces back for him. So I don't know if the sky is falling as much as, in my opinion, the sky isn't falling as much as some may think.
Right, and that's and I got to say too. I mean, that's why having veterans like Adam Partey, who I thought had a good game, might have only played 11 minutes. I have no problem, no confidence issues with Adam Partey. And then you have Jay Harrison, who you hope is not injured long term. He's been out the last few games with an injury, but having a guy like Jay Harrison, he's skating. So yeah. If you need to plug in a guy like Jay Harrison, who we know Paul Maurice has 100% confidence in, he doesn't have a flashy game, but as we know, Jay Harrison's a big body. He knows how to play the NHL game. He'll stick up for his teammates. He's not Bobby Orr, but he gets the job done.
He's playing against third or fourth lines, though, is he? That's
right.
The end of the day.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, because you've moved Byfuglien up now,
right?
You know, Partey and Harrison are your 6-7 guys. And so you don't necessarily have to acquire someone. Plus, you've got Paul Postma, who seems like he hasn't played in 2 months, there as well. I still think the Jets, you know, they've got Patrice Cormier up right now. I still think you want to bring in some more goals there. Whether that's calling someone from the AHL, which at this point of the season might not happen.
There's nobody in the AHL who's coming into this. There's nobody on the Jets and the Jets farm system who's coming into this roster right now and contributing offense.
Because the fourth line wouldn't be as it is if there was.
If there was somebody who was going to come in, then that player would already be up here. That player would have been up here months ago. You know, how incumbent is it upon Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff to go out now and make a trade to get a third line guy, to get a top nine guy.
We talked about that. It needs to be done. We've said that. But there's been a top nine need for 3 years. So, I mean, you expect him to finally do something because, again, I think the players are pushing him a bit here. I think there's some of that. But that expectation, to me, that need is still there. That need's been there for a while.
Right, and it's a winger.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be clear about that because, you know, right now you have Adam Lowry playing center and Matthew Perreault playing wing.
Sure.
They don't need, it's not the center position. You got Jim Slater playing fourth line. That's fine. You need, to me, a veteran goal scoring winger. And whether you want to call it top six or top nine,
top nine.
To play the role contributing goals on the wing. So if he plays, and again, we know that guys like Michael Frolik can play second, third line, Bufflin, second, third, whatever you want to call it. They need somebody in there to take some of the burden, Richie, off of the top line. Because as I mentioned on the midweek show, you have the top line, Matthew Perreault. Those four guys are responsible for 50%, 48%, whatever it was, of the goals.
Just quickly, Drew,
when you get into the playoffs, you know, did anybody expect Justin Williams to win the Conn Smythe last year? I mean, I'm not saying Justin Williams isn't a good player, but I'm saying he's a secondary scorer after Kopitar and after Jeff Carter. So I'm just saying, when it comes down to the playoffs, which the Jets have a very good chance at and most likely will get in there, you need other guys in there contributing. So a veteran scoring winger, to me, is absolutely something. And again, I'm not the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, but if I'm Chevy, if I was him, I would think that that would be at the top of my wish list.
I would agree with you there, and it shouldn't be that difficult to replace the contributions of Evander Kane. We know what he did, that he was very good, you know, on the penalty kill, and he was aggressive on the forecheck and everything else. But, you know, push comes to shove, and you look at the stats. The guy has 22 points this season. Mm-hmm. He didn't really make the players he played with any better. You know,
he made the line, when you play in the third line, he made the line more effective in that they were able to create forecheck and able to sustain time in the other zone and all those things, Drew. Right? But to your point about actually...
Adam Lowry's not going to have a draw. His offense isn't going to plummet because Evander Kane's not playing with him.
Time in the offensive zone will likely plummet. Not plummet, but for certainly not be as good. But, I mean, his chance of scoring off of a pass from Kane, yeah, of course. I mean, there's two different things.
He never passed to begin with.
He's not a very good passer.
Yeah, you know, when he passed, it was a surprise to everybody. If the pass was completed. So, I mean, you know, I do think that it's, you know, the players have sort of forced the general manager's hand at this point to some extent, probably because they're fed up with the act as well. But you mentioned right at the top of the segment, this could be a galvanizing force for the Jets as a team. You know, the Bill Simmons old Ewing theory, where one player gets injured and you think, or leaves the team or whatever, you're subtracting one player from the roster and you think, oh man, we're all going to collapse now, when in fact it acts in the other way. And for whatever reason, because it's, you know, psychological to some extent as much as it is performance-based, the team is better. You know, the team is better. They played the best game they've played since the All-Star break last night without Evander Kane in the lineup. And is that going to continue? Would that continue for the next 4 or 5 years? Probably not. But for the next 40 games, you know, 45 games, if you count the first round of a playoff series, no reason why it couldn't.
I think what you're looking at here, guys, is, and I know that it's not sexy and people don't want, you know, to hear that it's going to be a minor move, but whether you want to call it a minor move or not. But I think you're looking at possibly exploring trading a draft pick. Not necessarily a first-rounder, because I don't think you're going to bring in David Perron like Jim Rutherford did in Pittsburgh. But you're looking at moving possibly a second-rounder and maybe a prospect to get some scoring help. That's what I think you're looking at doing here.
You're not even going to
trade a top prospect or even a high draft pick. The guy you're looking for is a guy to be able to complement some of the players in the top. Now, again, said it earlier in the show, he needs to be better than Chris Thorburn and TJ Gagliardi.
Which isn't a very high bar to exceed. No, disrespect to those players.
Right.
But those players have their limitations, and those players would admit that they have their limitations. Yeah. And they're playing above where they should. Like you said, Richard, TJ Gagliardi was available for free, because effectively his salary is minuscule.
Yes.
He was available for free to any team that wanted him in the NHL twice this year, and everybody said no.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a high bar here. You're not going to be trading a future first round pick or a future second round pick. You're trading a fringe prospect, or you're trading a third or a fourth round draft pick a guy who can step in and just bump everybody down one spot. That's playing above where they should right now.
Bumping one guy down one spot.
That's right. You're bumping
TJ
Gagliardi to the press box, or you're bumping Chris Thorburn back down to the fourth line, however Paul Maurice wants to set it all up. So you're not revolutionizing this team. Now you're going to have to trade Zach Bogosian to fill the hole that is created by Evander Kane.
They're not trading Zach Bogosian.
It's not that drastic. Maybe they're trading Zach Bogosian or somebody else in the offseason because there's some huge package deal. But here in the now, before March 2nd, which is, 25 days away from now, you know, it's not going to be a revolutionary move made by Kevin Shoveldayoff.
To 25 days?
It's about 23 days. If 23 I
days,
correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah, 23 days because it's the, you know, there's
3 weeks Monday.
3 weeks, three weeks on Monday.
That's soon.
That's very soon.
What are you guys counting down the hours here?
Well, I mean, hey.
A lot of people are. It's the trade deadline, Ezzy. That's a fun day.
Oh, boy.
It's a fun day, especially with the team in the playoff spot.
Absolutely.
For the first time.
Absolutely.
I think this year, last year, I think we traded you for a conditional draft pick. This year, I think it's just going to be futures.
That's fine. That's fine. You can trade me for a Subway sandwich for all I
but
care.
But Remus ate it, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Remus already ate it. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild color analyst here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with your latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Minnesota Wild color analyst Mike Greenlay. Mike, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
How you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good.
That's good. From a Minnesota Wild perspective, you know, obviously they know what's happening here in Winnipeg with all the drama and the saga around Evander Kane. Is there sort of a little bit of a schadenfreude that might be happening there, saying these guys might not be completely focused on the task at hand and we're going to gain some ground on them?
Well, you know, they can only obviously control what they're doing. I guess you're always looking upwards, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're always looking at the teams that are ahead of you. And right now, starting tonight for the Wild, they play the three teams that are immediately ahead of them. They play the Avs tonight, and then on Monday they play Vancouver. Then on Tuesday they go to Winnipeg. So all three of those teams obviously are ones that they're trying to catch. So you know, obviously they played well recently, and they're trying to keep some consistency in their game. So. I guess if you're a Winnipeg fan, you look for any opportunity you can in terms of other teams maybe going on a skid, or, and then also, you know, getting points out of your own games. And I think the Wild are no different. They're looking and saying, you know, if we can catch teams at a bad time, then more power to them.
We haven't seen the Wild in Winnipeg since the back-to-back between the Jets and the Wild just after Christmas. Since then, the Wild, you know, have been playing better, 6-3-1 in their last 10. They've won four straight games. They've really got themselves back into the playoff race, especially with some games in hand on a number of teams, including the Jets. You know, is it a function? Is it only a function of getting the goaltending settled and you know, getting that sort of back calibrated to what the Wild expected at the beginning of the year?
Well, I mean, it has, I think it has a lot to do with being the catalyst, because for the Wild, when they're playing their, I guess, brand of hockey, if you want to call it that, when they're playing a forechecking style, when they're using their speed, that's when they are their best. What happened is, I think, with some, you know, some of the questionable goaltending situations that they got into a little while back, they stopped playing that way because it's instinctive for teams to want to try and protect when they don't feel that they're, you know, things are being taken care of back in their own end. And they ended up, you know, playing a certain style that wasn't conducive to them winning hockey games. And with Dubnyk coming in, he immediately gave them the kind of structure that they needed back there to just let them play their game. And I think that they're playing closer to the style they played at the beginning of the season than they have all season. So right now they have confidence that the goaltender is going to make at least the ones that he's supposed to make, and maybe a couple more. And because of that, they are you know, they're allowed to play in the offensive zone a lot more. And that's kind of been their thing all year. I mean, they're the lowest shots allowed in the league so far this year on a per game basis. Their shot differential since Dubnyk's been here is number one in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing things offensively, but they're doing it because they know that they're covered back in their own end.
Mike, you know, we got to talk a little bit more about Devin Dubnyk, because I think this has been one of the greatest stories coming over from Phoenix. 8 games, he's won 4 in a row, he's won 6 out of the 8 games, .943 save percentage, 1.4 goals against. And then, you know, earlier today, Michael Russo was tweeting about that Darcy Kemper, who won in Hamilton last night, is going to be making his final conditioning stint in the AHL. So what do you do with Darcy Kemper coming back? Do you split some starts, or how do you think Mike Yeo is going to handle that?
Well, they don't have the luxury of doing anything but going with the guy who's winning games. Right now, that's Devin Dubnyk. I agree with you. It's been obviously very good for the Wild to have Devin Dubnyk come in. When he came in, he was playing well. Obviously, he was playing well in Arizona. So when he came in, they knew they'd get a guy that at least has, you know, been stopping the puck. And so it was good for the Wild. But you think of the opportunity that Devin Dubnyk's got. He came into a situation where they needed a guy to step in and, you know, effectively take over the number one role, which is something that if you asked, you know, 29 or 30 backups out of the entire National Hockey League, that they would tell you, yes, please. I mean, give me that chance. So he's coming into a situation where he's going to get a shot at being the number one guy. He's an unrestricted free agent, so he's given the opportunity to take a team, you know, and hopefully get them into a playoff position. And also, he's playing for a team that we all know is playoff-style team that just hadn't been in the playoffs or didn't get themselves into a playoff picture. So he's really coming into a kind of perfect storm situation for him, and it's also helping the Wild. So, I mean, when Darcy Kemper comes back, you know what? You'll have 3 goalies at practice. I'm assuming Dubnyk will get his net, and the other 2 will split off in the other net. And, you know, if we get into a situation where there's a lot of games in a short span of time, then I'm sure, you know, Mike, you'll have to decide who else would start other than Dubnyk. But it's Dubnyk's net. He's taken it. It's his, and it's his to lose.
Mike, Mikael Granlund is one of those guys where you look at the stats, you see 18 points in 36 games. To me, doesn't tell the whole story and his effect on the team. You know, he's centering Parise and Vanek right now, and he's been productive lately. How important is he to overall how the Wild create offense?
Oh, I think he's crucial. I mean, he also helps the Wild with that that second power play unit. It hasn't scored a lot. The first unit kind of got themselves going, but. You know, keep in mind, Mikael Granlund was out, I don't know, 13 mm-hmm. games or so, end of December, into January, most of January, with that wrist injury. I obviously incurred against Winnipeg there with the Bufflin hit. But,
right.
You know, so getting him back, he's only been back for 4 games, but he's found his game very quickly. You know, he's got 3 points in his last 2 games. And so I think that having a guy like him who has that top 6 mentality, who's, you know, getting better in the faceoff circle, who's, shooting the puck more. That if you get him in that situation and you get him playing that role with the same mentality as guys like Parise and Vanek, who are net first type guys. Well, I mean, it can only help you. So having him back and hopefully having him feeling good about his game, after only playing 4 after being out, that certainly bodes well for the Wild. They just need that top 6 to keep going. I mean, Zach Parise had started his good push here even before Granlund came back. But the 7 goals in the last 8 games for Parise mm-hmm. has continued with Granlund there as well. So it's definitely a good look for the Wild.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Mike Greenlay. Mike is a color analyst for the Minnesota Wild. Mike, wanted to ask you about Ryan Suter. He had that stretch sort of in the middle of January where he just had a number of games in a row where he really struggled. Since then, he seems to be sort of getting back to being the Ryan Suter that we expect, you know, logging huge minutes on the back end for the Wild and performing very well, you know, defensively. You know, would you agree with that assessment? Do you see this, the old Ryan Suter reemerging after that mid-January slump?
Well, yeah, and I think not so coincidentally, his turnaround has kind of mirrored the Dubnyk coming in and solidifying the goaltending and, allowing the Wild to play their game. The last thing guys want to do is run around in their own zone. And, no, that's not all on the goaltending. I'm certainly not laying it all on that, but it goes to the mentality of the team. And, you know, Ryan Suter, when you're out there for half of the game, you're going to reflect positively or negatively what the team's doing and or what your goaltender's doing. I mean, it just that's and he's out there not just half a game, but he's out there in a lot of the key situations in half the game. So he's kind of a reflection sometimes of how the whole team is going, and he needs to be a big part of the positive side of that, which he is. And yeah, I think his game certainly has turned around. I think he's feeling better about his game, and I think the entire team playing, as I mentioned before, playing the kind of hockey that they're supposed to be playing, has been afforded to them now because of the fact that they've kind of got their game in shape and they've got their own zone in shape, and they got Dubnyk who's making the saves for them.
Mike, I know we've asked you about Jason Zucker before, but you know, to me, he's a player that he really seems to be getting more comfortable. He's got 18 goals now, only 5 assists, so I guess he's going for the Cy Young Award. But you know, in his first full season here, you know, he's playing with Mikko Koivu there on the second line with Jason Pominville. How have you seen his game grow this year?
It's been incredible. I mean, it's a great story. I mean, last year he was up and down. I mean, I think he led the Minnesota Wild for sure in air miles last year because he was up and down a lot, wasn't gaining traction necessarily in Mike Yeo's system, just because you know Mike Yeo does preach good responsible play in your own zone and in the neutral zone, and I think it just took a little while for Zucker to kind of buy into the whole process of being, you know, being that type of player where if you trust that you play the defensive side of the puck and you do the right things, you're going to get your offensive chances. There's no question. We all knew that he had a nose to the net attitude, a kind of a shooter's mentality, lots of speed, good hockey sense on the offensive side. Once he bought in and figured out that that's going to still happen, but it's going to happen more if you do the right things in your own zone. You can go back and look at his goals this year, on a good number of them or a good number of his good chances. They're based on doing something good a lot of times on the defensive nature, whether it's a back check, whether it's good posture in his own zone, something. And when he has a recognition of an offensive opportunity, when the puck gets transitioned the other way, then he's usually in the guy or at least one of the guys in position to do that. So I talked to him actually today about it. It's kind of funny because he says that it has been about, you know, buying into that thought process and, you know, not cheating, not trying to get away with anything, just doing what you need to do and recognizing that opportunities will come if you do that. And he's bought into it. He's bought into his own game and he's getting the benefits for it. I mean, he's been a terrific asset for the Wild here. He has a couple goals in his last two games, albeit one being an empty netter, but that doesn't matter. I mean, the fact is he's had great opportunities. So, you got to hope that he keeps going, and he's been pretty consistent all season long because Mike Yeo was preaching about his game very early on in this season on how it had turned around to the point where he understood that take care of your own end, then take care of the other end.
The final question for you, Mike. You know, Mike Yeo signed his extension at the end of last year. How hard was it for him, you know, to see like the process that the Wild were continuing, as you mentioned before, you know, shot prevention and getting a lot of shots on net? All those numbers seemed to look pretty good. The goaltending wasn't there. How frustrated was he and how effective was he at continuing to get that same message out there in the hopes of eventually, as they have, receiving better goaltending?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like I said, we don't want to pile on the goaltenders altogether. Right. That's obviously a huge factor on any team. I mean, the fact is that, you know, the Wild went through some interesting adversity early on this season. I mean, you have your two blue chip free agents that they brought in a few years ago in Suter and Parisi, both losing their fathers this year. One in training camp with Suter, one just a few weeks back in Parisi. That's kind of something that is a setback, mm-hmm. not only for the player, obviously, but, you know, everyone else, you know, in that team mentality and everyone's brothers kind of thing. It that kind of has a resonating effect through the whole team. Then, you know, and there's this crazy mumps, you know, that kind of ticked off pretty much every one of the Wild defensemen at one point. Then there was a stomach flu that kind of went through the team. Yeah, you know, every team goes through their different adversities, but it seemed like for the while they kept hitting one thing after another. So, and then as you mentioned, the goaltending, you know, something that we are all very aware of, that it needed to come up and be the difference, and it wasn't. So all of these things kind of compiled throughout the mid part of the first half of the season there. And I think now that the guys are healthy and now that the guys are moving into their game and they have the goaltending that they want and everything, I think they've turned that corner. But for Mike Yeo, it was all about, you know, staying with the message and staying with it, because he went through the same thing last year. I mean, it was almost identical to last year where, you know, it was all this, the Wild had lost six in a row and, you know, everyone was calling for Mike Yeo's head, and it was one of those things. And all of a sudden he stuck with it. He stayed with the message. He kept communicating with his players, both as a team and individually, one-on-one. And, you know, they made it through last year, and I think he had the confidence to know that if things turned around from a health perspective and everything, and they got guys playing the way they should be, that it would come around for him this year. Well, you know what? I guess the proof will tell down the road here. I mean, it's the Wild still aren't in the playoffs, and they still got a long way to go, but they've played well as of late, and they hope that can continue to carry through.
Mike Greenlay is the Minnesota Wild color analyst. Mike, we appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us this afternoon. We'll see you Tuesday night here in Winnipeg.
Sounds great, guys. Take care.
Thanks very much, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we return, Mike Chambers from the Denver Post.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Minutes past 2 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Reminder, 10 minutes from now, we open up the phone lines at 780-1290. Want to hear from you. You get your say in the Evander Kane saga. Where do you lay the blame? Is it on the feet of Mr. Kane himself? Do you think it's at the door of Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff?
Or do you blame Drew?
There's a lot of people blaming the media, which I do find to be quite hysterical, but, you know, maybe you think it's the media's fault, and if you can articulate a good argument, I'll hear you out. I think you're crazy, but I'll hear you out. Maybe it's Dustin Byfuglien's fault. Anyways, 10 minutes from now at 780-1290, we open up the phone lines to give you the chance for your say on the Evander Kane saga. Having some trouble getting a hold of Mike Chambers, so we'll do some look around the NHL for some news and notes. Rangers lose Henrik Lundqvist for 3 weeks after he takes that shot to the throat. Say minimum 3 weeks, might be closer to a month as well. How significant of a loss is that for for the Rangers to lose Lundqvist in that manner?
Very Drew question right there. How Drew is that question, Ezzy?
I didn't write the show plan, so it can't even be a Drew question. It's got to be an Ezzy question.
The fact that the Rangers are 8 points ahead, I knew that already. The fact the Rangers are 8 points ahead of the Florida Panthers with a game in hand, and the fact that the Eastern Conference essentially is more or less settled for the top eight. Mm-hmm. It's not as big of an issue as it would be otherwise. If this was the playoffs, of course, it'd be a huge factor, Drew. But a guy like Henrik Lundqvist, who's, you know, again a little older and has played a lot of games, this might actually benefit the team down the stretch, so long as he is healthy.
A bit of a blessing in disguise, as if you will.
Sure, Drew.
Okay, Ezzy, do you agree with Richard's analysis?
Well, he's not going to be out for that long. So, and Cam Talbot's done a good job as the backup. So, I mean, you're talking about an unfortunate situation. The Rangers have a terrific group of defensemen. So, you're going to miss him because he's had an excellent year, and he always seems to have an excellent year. He's one of the top goalies in the league. But, you know, it's really good timing if you think about it. You really wouldn't want this to happen around the first round of the playoffs, especially if you're talking about right now the Rangers would possibly match up against a team like Detroit, who seems to be scoring, not having any trouble scoring goals and winning games, so they'll be all right.
Yeah, the Detroit Red Wings, you know, we saw them once earlier in the year, and we're going to see them next Saturday. Yep. I believe the Jets are in Detroit to play them next Saturday after they head to Nashville on Thursday. Detroit Red Wings are an interesting team. Nobody's really talking about them. They're sort of just going about, like they always do, really, with the Red Wings, is they're going about their business. This year, better than last year. Last year, they were tooth and nail to make it into the playoffs, and they were eliminated pretty quickly in the first round.
They've only lost four games at home this year, Drew.
Yeah.
In regulation. It's unbelievable.
17-4-6.
Well, there's a couple reasons for that. I think when your main reason for that is your young players are taking the next step.
Sure.
Yep.
That's probably your main reason for the reason they've succeeded. Your veterans are still obviously your effective veterans, and guys like Abdicator don't get a lot of attention. I know Eddie likes him. I like his game. Guys like that, very effective.
Yep.
Quiet. They're able to roll four lines. Their defense is unassuming, but moves the puck. You know, and they have the best coach in the league, in my opinion. And they have depth. Yeah, no, they're as good as anyone. And they came into town here in Winnipeg, and they played a nice road game. Real nice road game.
If I recall correctly, it was the second half of... I might be wrong on that, so don't quote me on that. I thought it was the second half of a back-to-back.
I believe it was, and they won 4-3, I believe. 4-3 or 4-2, one of the two.
One of the two. Actually, you look at the next two Jets games.
Yeah.
Colorado, of course, comes in tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Second half of a back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Second game in 22 hours, given that it's a 7 p.m. puck drop in St. Paul tonight against the Wild. Not significant travel, but travel nonetheless. And then on Monday, the Wild play at home to the Vancouver Canucks before they have to come to Winnipeg on Tuesday night. So the schedule maker has done the Jets a little bit of a favor tomorrow night and then again on Tuesday night. So it's imperative on the Jets to take advantage of that. We hear so much, talk, and this is, it's across the league, talk about 5 games in 9 nights, 6 games in 8 nights, 7 games in 10, whatever, arbitrary endpoints you want.
The same amount. I mean, come on.
Right.
They all take advantage of the opportunities on the back-to-backs, but you're all going to fail. I know some teams play more back-to-backs than less, but over time it'll even out. So it's overblown, I think. 7 and 11 and whatever it is.
It's arbitrary endpoints. You can always pick a day and pick an end day that one team has played, 3 and 4 or 4 and 6 or everything else. So it is a little bit blown out of proportion, as you mentioned. Matt Cook is going to be out of the Wild lineup for the next 5 to 6 weeks. It's hard to believe that, you can ask about the impact of Matt Cook, assuming that he doesn't concuss anybody with a cheap shot elbow, but he's got hernia surgery. What significance to the Wild lineup do you figure?
Well, I mean, Matt Cook is obviously not one of the favorite players in the NHL for his history, Richie, but you're losing, obviously, a veteran presence. You're not losing a lot as far as goal scoring. I mean, Matt Cook, 36 years old, he's towards the end of his career, but, the Minnesota Wild went out in the offseason, got a guy like Ryan Carter, who was on the Devils last. I mean, they've got other guys on this team who can supply toughness. So, to me, you're not losing a lot, but, hey, if the Minnesota Wild, get to a situation where they're in a playoff spot, you definitely want Matt Cook helping you down that stretch drive, but that's more so what you're losing. You're losing that leadership and a gritty player.
You're losing penalty kill and ability to forecheck. You talk about those things, and that's what you're losing. You're losing a guy who can cause trouble on the ice and draw some penalties, but overall, the Wild should
take some penalties.
Yeah, the Wild should be able to replace a guy like Cook, especially considering, as Mike Greenley mentioned, the top of the hour here, the injuries and the mumps and the distractions and the lack of goaltending they've had.
Sure. He's only played 27 games this year.
It's just another. It's been quite the sort of saga of a season for the Minnesota Wild. It's just another chapter in that. An interesting trade, not a really significant trade yesterday in the NHL, but sort of an interesting one when you talk about the maximum contract factor. You can only have 50 contracts. You can only have players signed to a grand total of 50 contracts. So the Leafs traded away Carter Ashton and David Brohl to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
In exchange, they get a conditional 7th-round pick, so the equivalent of nothing, simply because they were right up against the number of contracts, the maximum number of contracts they're allowed in the NHL. So it's not really newsworthy per se, but just an interesting subplot to something you don't often see talked about, the maximum number of contracts each team is allowed to have on the books.
You say interesting, I say really boring.
Okay.
But Carter Ashton on waiver. I mean, again, Drew, sure, opening up contracts, but at the end of the day, the Leafs, they're a disaster.
On this show, we like to go deep into the world of hockey, so we talk about things.
I aren't even talk about the Leafs' first contract, never mind their 50th contract.
Would you rather we spend more time talking about possible destinations for Dion Phaneuf and Phil Kessel?
I'd rather talk about neither of them. Ezzy, what kind of a show plan is this?
I thought it was a pretty good show plan. I threw that in. I mean, come on, there's Jets ties there, Brent Ashton's kid.
Is the inhaler getting traded with him?
But it's actually, somebody had a very funny tweet that they hope the asthma or the thick humidity of South Florida doesn't trigger Carter Ashton's asthma from acting up again.
I love how it's news. Like, so many of these guys now get traded after they clear waivers.
Yeah.
Like Arcabello, Derek Roy, Carter Ashton. shows you how the other team who's taking them even doesn't value them.
Sure, because they were available for absolutely nothing. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. 204-780-1290. Who is to blame for the latest in the Evander Kane saga? One more time, 204-780-1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Two:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. We're taking calls here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, which in and of itself is a rarity, given that we haven't done it in probably over a year. 780-1290, we want your take on who is to blame for the latest in the Evander Kane saga. We go now to Constantine. Constantine, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Mani Shma, boys. How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Got it a call in, my favorite show. So, yeah, just got it a call in from the perspective of somebody who is a loyalist Evander Kane supporter. I've seen enough of it. I'm done with it in my life. I got other things to do. So let's just close that one up and move on, I guess.
So you said you were a loyal Kane supporter as of earlier this week, but now you've had enough. Is that right?
I got the pennant in my room down. I put the autographed puck away. I don't know what to do with the rest of my Evander Kane signed stuff, but it's enough. We got to move on. Healthy start, new year. Let's go. And okay. I love you guys.
Well, we appreciate the love back to you there, Constantine.
Okay, bye, Drew.
We love you too, Constantine.
I love you the most, Ezra.
Take care, Constantine. Thanks for the call. 780-1290. Are you an Evander Kane supporter who's now done with him as a result of the latest saga? Are you saying, I'm on Team Kane still, and this is the fault of the Jets management and or Jets players?
You're seeing a couple of those yesterday at the game that were circulating on Twitter. Drew a picture of a Kane jersey with a 1 beside it, and then a tape over the name bar and changed to a Slater jersey. So that wasn't, you know, that, and then there was a Kane t-shirt. Mm-hmm. Classic Winnipeg, by the way. It wasn't a jersey thrown on the ice at the end of the game. It was a t-shirt that had tags on it.
Yeah, somebody went out, bought a Kane t-shirt, wouldn't want to pay for a Kane jersey. And they threw it on the ice, which of course we don't condone necessarily.
Who would buy a t-shirt just to throw it on the ice? Like, you spend $30 on a t-shirt and then they throw it on the ice?
Yeah, I don't know.
Someone's doing well.
There was a guy in front of me. There was a guy in front of me in section 318 who had a Kane jersey, and he had the Kane name, the name bar duct taped over. Still had the number 9, mm-hmm. but he had the Kane name duct taped over. We go to Beller. Beller, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. What's your take on the Evander Kane situation?
Hey, guys, long-time listener, first-time caller. Well, think you guys do a great job.
We appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I think it goes without saying that it's Evander Kane's fault. I mean, you show up late, you're not dressed properly. You know, you got to be disciplined somehow. That stuff should stay in the room. It doesn't. But, I mean, really, he's got to be accountable, and it's just awful. I mean, I've been calling for it. Richie knows. I've been calling for mm-hmm. it for years. That we got to trade this guy. Well, there's still value, and unfortunately, it's just gone too long. And really hope this doesn't affect their chance of the playoffs. I hope Chevy does make some kind of a move and bring somebody in to help us out. And Ezzy, have you seen my Kane shirt? I lost it last night of the game.
Okay, so now we know whose shirt it was.
Yeah, very clever. Thanks for the call, Beller. Appreciate it.
No, but obviously, you know, Beller's a good buddy of ours. And you know, it's a situation here where I think this last incident with Evander Kane in Vancouver might be, as you mentioned earlier, Drew, the straw that broke the camel's back here. And this might be, it's quite certain that it might be Evander Kane's last game in Winnipeg.
And this is the thing, and Beller talks about it there in terms of the value and trading him when you had value. And again, I don't think, again, I think his value is diminished a bit, but maybe not as much as people think, but it's not ever going to be what Kevin Sheveldayoff initially thought it would be. And
well, after the 30-goal season, he probably thought, he's 40 and 50, and then we're going to trade him, and we're going to get a King's ransom. And
in retrospect, it would have been then. But, I mean, there were many opportunities.
Sure.
From afar, not seeing what the offers were, to at least pull the trigger. Again, I always go back to the Eric Johnson comparison. St. Louis drafts Eric Johnson, I believe it was first overall in 07.
It was first overall.
Yes. In 07, I believe it was. Yeah. 06 or 07.
Like Garrett Joyce's book.
And St. Louis evaluates Eric Johnson and early on acknowledges, obviously privately, that he wasn't maybe what they expected him and thought he would be when they drafted him. What do? Instead of sitting and waiting and letting the rest of the league figure it out, they trade him to Colorado. He's played well in Colorado, especially this year. But they trade him to Colorado. They get Kevin Shattenkirk back. They get Chris Stewart. They make a move before the rest of the league had figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you wonder if, and the return they got may not be able to get if people saw him play more. In this situation, maybe it may be a little bit late. Because it's later, may not get as much because of it.
204-780-1290, that's the phone number. We want to hear from you about where you lay the blame for the saga surrounding
Evander Kane. Can we find another word that isn't saga?
Sure. Would you like to call it a gate? Would you like to call it Kane gate?
No, not saga, not gate. Let's just call it situation.
Okay, fine, the situation. Let's go to North End Rick. North End Rick, welcome to the program.
Gentlemen.
How are you?
Well, you know. Fat, old. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well.
You've called the right show then, Rick.
Okay, first of all, the blame factor.
Yeah.
I think that 99% of this has to be put on Kane. I don't know how you can blame Buff at all. Buff is, put it this way, guys, in a locker room like that, Buff was nothing more than a figurehead for the rest of the group. Okay? Something had to be done. Bufflin did it. He's taking the heat for it, but there's no way that the reaction should have been this large from Kane. Okay? If you want to put anything on Chevy, I mean it's got to be tough. It's tough to trade somebody who has scored 30 goals in the past, correct? You got to think that a young kid like that, regardless of attitude, it's difficult to trade that asset away and get what you think should be fair market value for it. Not everybody can do what Peter Chiarelli did and deal away a kid like Seguin. But you're right. Seguin and Kane are two totally different players. You can't think that Kane is going to be anything more than what he is right now in terms of his attitude. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's ever going to get any better. This isn't immaturity, guys. This is ego. I mean, a group can bring somebody who is immature into the fold. A group cannot change someone's ego. And that is what exactly has happened now. And I think that the guys, when you listen to their takes in the dressing room, and everybody's saying it happened in the dressing room, it's staying in the dressing room, you're not going to hear anything about it. But you could almost see this relief. Like, this has been dealt with. We did something. It's finally done with. We're not going to have to deal with this anymore. Yes, we're going to have to answer questions for the rest of the league as we go through, especially the Canadian cities. But in terms of what has happened, it's done with. And this should be the final straw. We're not going to have to deal with him anymore. And I think that there's this huge sense of relief.
Appreciate
what we get back, I don't know.
I appreciate the call. Good point there. I do think that you're onto something with the rest of the team, you know, having a sigh of relief now that the Evander Kane situation has been dealt with once and for all. Excellent call there, North End Rick.
I mean, once and for all, we think at this point. I mean, we haven't necessarily addressed it formally. That was a really good call. We haven't necessarily addressed if we expect him to return. I'll speak for myself. I'll obviously, yeah. The two of you just chime in. I don't think he'll ever play for the Winnipeg Jets again.
No,
I don't think there's any chance of that.
I agree with that too, Richie. I think it's going to be really tough to bring a player back who obviously has a certain amount of negative history with other teammates in the room. It's going to be tough.
I'd be shocked if he played for Winnipeg again. No.
I think the bridge hasn't just been burned. It's been napalmed, and then the It's done with Evander Kane in this
Vietnam
city,
there?
I would suggest. Let's 204-780-1290. We want to hear from you regarding the Evander Kane saga. Let's go to Uncle Bob. Uncle Bob, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, boys. How's it going?
Good. How you doing, Uncle?
Great. I 100% Kane's fault. The problem is that I disagree with you. It's not over and done with yet because he's still a Winnipeg Jet. Cheval Dayoff must be kicking himself, though, because he knew, had to know that this was going to be the end result, whether it was a week ago or a month ago or preseason. We've been talking about Kane and his antics since the Jets came back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now you're stuck with a guy who is a cancer previously, who every other general manager knows is they can get to rock bottom. You're not going to get anything for him, whereas at the beginning of the season or in the off season they could have got something for him. And that's what really bothers me the most, is they should have taken care of this a long time ago rather than let it be a nuclear explosion that's tearing the club apart and tearing the fan base. You know, everybody's got an opinion on it. They should have just got something for him and walked away from him.
Well, Uncle Bob, I think you make, you know, several good points there. I think if you look at the past 4 years, there were several incidents that really showed you that Kane's maturity was in question, and incidents with teammates, and it's kind of resulted in a situation where now they're almost forced to trade Kane. And I think,
you're not going to get anybody for him.
You're right, and it makes it harder for Kevin Cheveldayoff. It was already hard for him to be in a situation to trade him originally because of his unique skill set and the circumstances, and now his position is almost weakened again.
Exactly. One more quick thing. I came late to the show. I enjoyed it, but I've been driving around. You talk about the Kane jerseys. The guy in front of me with the in true Winnipeg spirit took a piece of masking tape and put a 1 in front of a 9 and wrote in Slater across the name bar so he could reuse his jersey. I thought that was brilliant.
It's good thinking outside the box. At its core, we're still cheap Winnipeggers when push comes to shove. Appreciate the call, Uncle Bob. 204-780-1290. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. You keep the calls coming in. 204-780-1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. There's nothing worse than unwanted surprises, like finding out your favorite player just got traded, or getting internet overage charges. But MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Talked to one player that played with him in the World Championships and said it was an act like he's never seen before. That's the only way he described him. So what that means, I'm not sure. But he made a point of sending me a note to give his feedback, to say of all the players, he's never really had any issues, but that's the one guy that it was just, you know, it wasn't good. And it was, nobody liked it, and he stuck out for the wrong reasons.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was Jeff O'Neill earlier, about an hour or so ago, talking on this program about Evander Kane, saying, oh, that's pretty strong words from one NHLer to about Evander Kane, saying that they've never seen anything like his act. And I'm confident in saying that they mean that in the negative sense of the word when he was overseas playing for Team Canada at the World Hockey Championships.
I like the point by North and Rick. I like, you know, the calls we're getting are good so far. North and Rick made the point, I believe it was North and Rick, who said that, you know, it's not immaturity, it's ego.
Mm-hmm.
And if all these, you know, that's one thing I hear a lot about, oh, he's young. You know, immaturity is one thing, ego is a different thing. It doesn't mean you can't be immature and have an ego, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, but I do think sometimes we hear so much about immaturity, but really what people mean is an ego issue.
Absolutely. Lots of comments coming in via Twitter as well. River City Man says he thinks people are making too big of a deal of how much Kane meant to the Jets. Ronnie Dhaliwal says that bullying in the locker room should not be endorsed. Hashtag stop bullying now. I think we said earlier in the show that none of the three of us believed that this was a case of bullying.
I don't believe this is bullying in any respect at all. I do not agree with that.
Yeah. So a lot of people chiming in on Twitter as well. Evander's Kane saying that Kane's to blame and the leadership's responsible. So a lot of people coming in. You can send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. Let's go on back to the phone lines, 204-780-1290. Bell, you're on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi, guys.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thanks. What's your take on the Evander Kane situation?
Yeah, I agree with what everybody's been saying. It's definitely a huge ego problem, and his maturity is, or immaturity rather, is, you know, sort of out of control. And a lot of kids look up to him, young hockey players, and when you have bills on your back, when you're doing push-ups and posting other pictures on Instagram and Twitter. It's frankly inappropriate, and it's like not acceptable when you're making millions of dollars a year and you're not even consistent. So like guys like Ladd and Little. So I think he'll never play another game as a Jet, and they should definitely trade him. And I understand it'll be a loss to the Jets, but again, he's not a consistent enough player like Little or Ladd or Frolik to make that much of an impact, whether to get the Jets in the playoffs or not. He's not that type of player.
Bell, that's a terrific call, and we appreciate you listening to the program. Thanks very much for that.
Thanks, guys.
Well, I think Bell makes a good point here about him being not maybe his actions and what he's put out on Twitter and Instagram not being a good you know, message for kids, because you know you're in the NHL, whether you like it or not, you are a role model. So I think, you know, that's a good call.
Do you think, and on that point, to elaborate on Bell's point, do you think that the Jets internally were happy with the pictures of money on the back?
No, of course not. Yeah. It's not this organization's style by any stretch of the imagination.
And it's also, as Jeff O'Neill,
this is a very conservative organization. That's a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination.
It's a safety issue. It's not safe to have all of that money on your back.
True. You might
that could have been why he has a shoulder
injury.
That could
injury. Be. He may have torn his labrum because he had the dollar bills on there. That's Jeff O'Neill's comment.
Just take a couple of stacks out off and you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's right. Let's go, Joe from Winnipeg. You're on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Good, Joe. How are you?
Good. I rarely call in, but I've been listening to you guys for years, back in the Sirius XM days.
You mean Kick FM?
Oh, yeah. No. It was Kick FM that I heard you guys for the first time, but I was talking to the Sirius XM guys, telling them, you know, you guys have to have these guys on your program because they're really good. This is before the Jets came and everything.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we appreciate the long time listening.
That's
there,
awesome.
Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks very much for that.
So I really don't want to spend any more energy on Kane other than to say, you know, he was never a good fit. His ego, he's not a representative of Winnipeg or Manitoba. So it was never going to work. So I'm kind of glad it's over, almost relieved. But the one thing I did want to mention is I think Chevy's getting a bad rap, because my understanding from what I've overheard is that Paul Maurice went to Chevy. Chevy did want to get rid of him at the summer, and Paul Maurice said, just give me a chance with him, give me a full season with the guy. I think I can turn him around. So I don't think Chevy is given enough credit. But I think, you know, the only fan in the room of Evander Kane right now is perhaps Paul Maurice, and I think he... this was just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Joe, appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
No, Joe makes a good point there, and we're not sure if that transpired. It's possible, but I think the point here is that, you know, we know that it was very close, Richie, that the Jets traded Evander Kane last year, and it didn't happen. And this was kind of year to see if did Evander Kane fit into the long-term plans of the Jets. And it's pretty clear that didn't work out.
I don't know if it was close as or not. I don't know what it was. All I know is that it should have been taken care of by now.
I would agree with that there, Richie. You know, 780-1290, put a 204 in front of that. That's 204-780-1290. Got about another 4 or 5 minutes that we're going to take calls on. And, of course, you can mention it on – you can contact us anytime on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. As well, you know, we don't often take calls, so take advantage of this opportunity right now.
I like the longtime loyalty.
Back nice to hear.
That was exactly. A really nice comment.
Let's go to Carrie in Southdale. Carrie, you're on with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Carrie?
Not too bad. Hey, you know, I got a couple of different perspectives on this. Number one, what Kane did in his own time in Vegas, whatever, that's fine. It's his own business. For him to put it on Twitter, you know what? That's fine, too. Everyone says that he's a role model for kids. Well, Twitter wasn't put out there for 12, 13-year-olds. Okay, it was put out there originally. You know, kids now have the devices and stuff and the awareness to get onto Twitter and find this stuff. That's fine. Understand that. What I had a problem with is the way he reacted around his teammates in the locker room, team trips, whatever. Obviously, that was wearing a little thin. I think Shevel Dayoff gambled here last summer and lost. Mm-hmm. By that, I mean, he was hoping that Kane would either A, fit into the locker room and have a good season with the Jets and remain a Jet, or B, have a good year, find out he wasn't a fit with the Jets, and his trade value went way up, and the trade deadline in the summer, we were going to get multiple offers and maximum return for a trade. Obviously, we lost on that, but I still don't think he's not an asset. Teams are going to look at him as an asset still. Whether he's a Jet or not, we're going to get something for him for not being a Jet. So therefore, he's still an asset to this organization. And people call in saying, well, we're not going to get anything worth, if he's not playing for the Jets, anything we get in return is worthy of whatever we trade for him, guys.
That's a good call, Kerry. I think he's an asset, but an asset that won't get you the same return as he may have gotten you 6 months ago, 12 months ago, certainly 18 months ago.
Kerry, appreciate the call. Thanks for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to Birds Hill Bill. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Birds Hill Bill. How you doing?
Well, not too bad. Thank you very much. By the way, you guys have by far the best hockey show on radio, bar none. Well,
thank you.
Appreciate
Bill.
That. Thanks, Bill.
We should say we didn't pay you for that.
What's your take on the Kane situation, Bill?
I was going to mention, I still haven't got the check, so.
Ezzy was supposed to buy dinner for Jeff O'Neill, too, so he might be waiting a while.
Anyway, my comments are this. It's definitely Kane's fault, and the only regret I have about the sweatshirt being thrown in, or the tracksuit, I should say, being thrown into the shower, is that Kane wasn't in it.
Not a fan, eh, Bill?
Now, the other thing I'd like to, I wish you guys would discuss sometime, who are the draft picks in that first round, either before or after Kane, that could be playing for the Jets right now?
We can go over. We can pull that up, actually. I was at that draft.
That was the John Tavares year.
Yeah, that was Luke Shen went after, and Nazem Kadri went after. So there was a few guys after that, Bill, that weren't necessarily as productive as you may think. But certainly, if the way this has ended up, there are some guys that went after that might be more helpful. But Atlanta, if I recall correctly, and I remember seeing Kane right
Oliver
in the concourse.
Ekman-Larsson, Braden Schenn.
So if you want to get to Ekman-Larsson, yeah, you're getting guys. You
it's
know,
not
Bill.
A great draft if you really look at it. But that's not a great. Kyle Palmieri went late in the first round, but. Yeah, that's not a great draft by any stretch. Carter Ashton, who we just talked about, went in the first round there as well. Bill, appreciate the call. Go ahead, Bill.
This is that if Kane ever does play for the Jets again, there will be two headlines in the papers. The first one will be Kane rejoins Jets. The second one will be man gets pregnant.
Bill, appreciate the call. Thanks very much. We got time for two more. Trevor and St. Vitale, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi there. I have a completely different take on this.
Go quickly.
I think this situation is brought on solely by the media. You think about it. He shows up late for practice. Sure, Buff's pissed, throws his clothes in the shower. That's fine. Coach sees him doing the stretching, notices he can't raise his arm quite right. Pulls him aside, tells him you're not going to play tonight. We're going to wait for you to get back to Winnipeg to see the doctors. Nobody said that we're going to trade him.
So the team has
said that he's welcome back in the room. It's the media that's just saying, oh, he's got to go, he's got to go. Don't get me wrong, I've thought he's got to go for years, but we're weaker without him, and unless you can get fair market value, you're best to keep him.
So wouldn't he have been designated then as not a coach's decision, a healthy scratch on Tuesday night?
Well, it would have
been shoulder
decision to not play him, yes.
Due to injury.
At the same token.
Due to injury.
He could have very well been hurt, and he at least wanted to, you know, take the game off of Ander. You can barely raise your arm doing the stretches out on the ice there this morning. How's about we wait till you get back to Winnipeg? Gets assessed, and he has to go for surgery. They say you could play, but really you're not going to be that effective if you can barely raise your arm.
Trevor, appreciate the call. I knew somebody was going to blame the media, and I'm glad you were able to make it in. Huh. There's only one way we can properly finish a show here where we take calls. And that's to go out to the Netherlands. Rowdy, yes. The Dutch Jets fan, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Rowdy, it's been too long.
Yeah, we miss you here in studio, Rowdy.
Yeah, I'll take every opportunity to talk to you guys again. So next time you open the phone lines, you can count on me.
Awesome.
We appreciate that.
Anyways, first of all, I would love to. I want to say that you guys have the best radio show on earth.
Thank you.
You've got the smartest guy on the station in Richard, the funniest in Ezra, and Drew, the way you absolutely handle with Ezra and even show up for the show because they burned you a couple minutes ago. Made you a legend. They should put your shirt. I don't believe you guys have jersey numbers, so let's put your shirt up to the rafters in the studios.
Appreciate that, Rowdy. Who's to blame for the Evander Kane saga?
Well, first of all, the one who's not to blame for this is Paul Maurice. I think he couldn't. He did everything in his power to prevent this situation from escalating. I think what Bufflin did, I don't blame him for it. If this happened in Boston, like with Bergeron, I think it would have been much worse. So I don't blame them either. The only one I could possibly blame, except for Kane, is Sheffy for not trading me earlier. But I can't really blame him for that too, because I thought he, Shifley and Wheeler would have great chemistry this season. It didn't happen, so I can't really blame him for that. Anyways, guys, thanks for taking my call, and I will hear what you guys have to say about it.
Rowdy, we always appreciate your call. You know you're always welcome, and then some here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to everybody who contributed to the show, whether it's via Twitter or if it's via the phone lines. We appreciated some great calls today and some great conversation. And I must say, everybody was tremendously respectful on Twitter, and that doesn't happen all the time, so we do appreciate that as well. Big thank you to our guests, Mike Greenlay from the Denver Post, and of course, Mike Greenlay from the Minnesota Wild color analyst, and Jeff O'Neill from TSN Radio in Toronto. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For Michael Remus, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.